Are you ready to unlock your fullest potential and achieve balance in all aspects of your life? Join us for an empowering journey through the Wheel of Life workshop. The Wheel of Life is a powerful tool that assesses various areas of your life, including career, relationships, health, personal growth, and more. Through insightful reflection and practical exercises, you'll gain clarity on where you stand and where you want to go. Don't miss out on this transformative experience. Whether you're seeking clarity, motivation, or a fresh perspective, the Wheel of Life workshop has something to offer everyone. The date of this workshop is April 4th at 6 p.m. Arizona time, and lucky for you, it's remote and on Zoom. Reserve your spot today and take the first step towards living your best life. See the show notes for more details.
Mean we stop talking about religion?
Yes.
No, we're still talking about religion. This was the perfect segue. So everybody, we're doing a cold open. It's Jay. I'm hosting again. Join with me from across the world, getting ready to celebrate Easter.
I'm in the future.
Claudia.
Hey.
We have missed the two Texas guys who are probably like 2 miles apart, but yet they're in different rooms. We should really do a podcast with you two sitting next to one another.
Because no, it's not a good idea.
Really start when you start this. Oh, we have Andrew Levin, Chris Merman. Andrew Levin, Chris Merman, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
Let's sin a little bit.
And I hope to God people don't listen to this episode at 1.5 times speed, because I must sound like the most cracked out chipmunk in the world. Okay, so
what are we talking about? That's every podcast with you.
This is true. So we're continuing our 7 Deadly Sins of an Agile Transformation, or Agile in and of itself. And this week we're talking about envy. So I'm going to start off with, envy is defined, and we're going to use Wikipedia, as an emotion which occurs when a person lacks another's quality, skill, achievement, or possession, and wishes that the other lacked it. So it's also I don't have it, but I wish I had what you had, or I wish you didn't have it, right? Aristotle defined envy as pain at the sight of another's good fortune, stirred by those who have what we ought to have, jealousy. Bertie Russell said that envy was one of the most potent causes of unhappiness.
Can I, Jay, throw out the initial question for everybody? Because as I was going through it, same thing that you just did, went through the definitions, I remembered our previous conversations, right? Greed, lust, gluttony. There is a piece of envy in all these other sins, but they're about specific things. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you all, what do you all feel in your, and this is, there's no wrong answer in this, right? What do you all feel like separates envy from the specified desire of the other sins that we've discussed? Anybody want to throw themselves out there?
Wow. Yeah, he gave us a question to make us think.
Yeah, that's a big question.
I thought we were supposed to just talk.
Well, then maybe we can just chat and maybe we can
I'll have a go at it. I'll have a go at it. So when I was digging into envy, the second part of that definition is the part that I think defines its difference between, say, gluttony or, say, pride, right? Envy is, I want what you have, but I don't want you to have it because I don't have it. That definition of envy, I don't want you to have it because I don't have it. That's what makes it different than, say, gluttony, which is I want more, or lust.
So it's the lacking part of it that separates it for you.
It's the metaphor I give is crabs in a bucket. Envy is crabs in a bucket. I don't want you to have what I don't have. So I don't want you to get out of the bucket. I'm going to pull you back down with me. So viewed through that lens, I think that's where envy makes its own sort of thing. And then we can tie this to management and agile, and I'm sure we're going to have a real fun with it.
Lef, what do you think about that?
No, I don't disagree with what Jay's saying. I think he phrased it well. I think they're all interconnected. So I just think it's kind of the emotional palette. You know, how are you going to paint with all these emotions on the palette? I think that's kind of the way that I would answer it. It's just, I don't think we're doing something a little abstract because we're singling these things out, these sins out. So it does kind of feel disconnected, but I don't think you can really have just one, right? This isn't Burger King. You know, you can't have it your way. I think you run through the gamut of all the sins.
The sins aren't a combo meal is what you're saying.
Exactly. Okay. And they're biggie sized, right? Everybody's biggie size in these things.
We want to size things in this state, Lef. Okay. I'm not sure if you're aware. We want to size things.
I am aware. I'm aware now. I get it.
I can't remember who talked about it, Wendy. It feels like one of those container ones or the primary colors. I don't know if it was Jay or Merm, but one of you drew a picture and I could see the picture of where they all fit and how other ones, certain sins draw on some of those central sin. So I feel like envy is one of those primary colors. We can blend it with the other ones and we'll get a different result.
I like that.
It definitely has a misery loves company sort of tone to it. It's but like that's the whole time Jay's like, you know, starting us with his definition. That's when I'm like, oh, this is where misery loves company, right? Like where we like, I'm sad and depressed. Let's bring everybody down to my level. Right. Like, hey, like the code didn't compile for the whatever time. Like, let's get jump at least pull everybody onto a call. Like we've had three production outages in the last month. We're having an all hands meeting ready, go. Like that is misery loving some effing company right there. Right.
Mm-hmm. But does it have to have that element? Because when I first thought of NBI, my initial reaction was just I wish I had this thing that somebody else had. I didn't think of the element of, and I don't want you to have it.
Mm. So, but let's go back to the religion, the capacity of this, like what at least we're told about these seven deadly sins, right? So to want something is not a sin per se, right? Let's like, give me a little bit of latitude here. It is not bad to want something, especially in the, you know, in the modern evangelical westernized prosperity gospel sort of God wants us all to be rich and happy and famous and stuff kind of a thing. Like the saying I want something is one of the most American things that we have. And those folks are driving the evangelical train all to kingdom come, right? So like wanting something is not necessarily the bad thing, but what are you willing to do when you don't get it, right? Like that, I think that's where sin really, like where envy really comes in is like, I want others to feel the misery that I do. That's maybe where, I don't know if that's a hot take, but that's where I differ is that I don't think it's a sin to want anything. Just like wanting to get better from a process improvement standpoint, I talk to people every single day that want to get better, right? Like that's not envy, but when it don't go that way and we want to burn the house down, like that's when envy rears its ugly head. Is that fair, Claudia?
If it is for you, I mean, the way that I was thinking about it is more, it's a sin against yourself. You just want something so bad. You want something else that somebody else has so bad.
You'll do anything to get it.
Yeah, anything to get it. Or it almost feels like self-pity. Like, oh, why can't I have that?
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Isn't that where it comes in, though? Isn't that the effect? So what you're both saying, kind of like, if you're envious, what are you willing to do, right, with that? How far are you willing to go? And you know, if you think about it in the corporate sense, hey, I went and visited this company and they're agile, right? They're awesome. They're having fun. Well, actually, probably that would never happen, but they look like they're more cohesive. They're delivering more, right? So people look like they're generally happy to be at work, blah, blah, blah. And then you become envious of that. And then you try and enforce it, right? Hey, we're now... It's kind of like teen sex. Everyone's doing it. Everyone's doing it wrong. That person's doing it. So now I want to do it. So that kind of mentality is how do you take that envy and use it to promote change in a way that does not anchor people to that change as they're sinking to the bottom of the ocean?
The sinking to the bottom of the ocean part really got me. Like I just felt like my insides drop when that, because I mean, we can all feel that, like we've all felt that before. It can be something simple as you know, we just got through all of the social media fun of I got rejected to speak at the conference and I need to take to LinkedIn to tell the world about it. Like which broke my heart in 7,000 ways. And we don't need to get into that, but like there's I got promoted or somebody else got promoted and you didn't. I get to work on a cool project and you didn't. Or how much did you get your contract for? You got it for X number of dollars per hour. I could never get X number of dollars per hour. I mean, there's a million ways to cut up. Like, why didn't I get that? So maybe that's the question of like, why didn't I get that? I'm just as good as that person. Like, we all can resonate with that feeling, right?
Right, right. That also ties to, typically we infer envy as jealousy, right? We typically make that connection. That's, you know, I want what the other person has. So to Lev's point, right? Like, hey, they're over there doing this. I want to do that too. Kind of a weird, not a weird aside, but one of the books that changed my life was Luke Burgess's Wanting. And it's all about mimetic desire, which is why we desire the things that we want, right? What are the things that motivate me to want something else? So for example, Lev and I are colleagues, right? Let's just say Lev and I are colleagues. And we're both agile coaches and Lev gets a job where he's running a transformation. So I think, well, I'm an agile coach just like him. And I think I'm as good as him. And he got a job at running a transformation. So I want to get a job running a transformation. And then he sees I get a job running a transformation. And then maybe just I go out and buy a new car. Lev's going to go, oh, well, we're peers. He just got a job that equals me, but he's the one who bought a new car. So I want to buy a new car. And it's that almost nuclear arms race. So the whole book talks about why we want the things we want. And a lot of it is envy and competition. Because I view myself as your peers. And if I think you are doing better than me, I want to do that. We can apply that same concept, which, by the way, everyone should read that book. It literally changed my life. Made me hate my job, but we're not going to talk about that now. We're not doing, you know, Jay's not going to lie down on the couch.
Just described Western capitalism.
Yes, because it explains the whole concept of envy when it comes to agile and transformations. Hey, that company's doing it. And there's, you know, Claudia Inc. is supposedly agile, right? Nobody's been behind the doors, but they see Claudia Inc.'s market share going up. They see her profitability going up. They see her CEO on Bloomberg and they say, I want that. I want that. So what did she do? Oh, well, she's agile. Oh, well, we have to go agile. Well, and then the problems start. And what did Dr. Malcolm say? And then there's screaming and running and then there's a whole bunch of hysteria, right? Like that's when this happens is... We make this false equivalency of that A equals B. And if A does plus one, well, B needs to do plus one. And then we end up with, again, consultants and gnashing of teeth and screaming. And yeah.
So Claudia, as a reformed American, right?
I don't know that I'm a reformed American. I'm away, the more American I feel.
I was just trying to, whatever. The path Jay was going down? I mean, that's a very American sensibility. I mean, do you run into that same?
I feel like it's a very human sensibility is to want what somebody else has and kind of
right, but at a
it, somewhere in between keeping up with the Joneses.
Yes. Yeah. Funny thing is,
maybe there's a whole lot more of keeping up with the Joneses in the States.
No. Claudia's not
or
wrong.
It's more vocal or visible.
Yes, Claudia's not wrong in the sense of the guy who... So Luke Burgess wrote the book. It's based upon a French polymath. So Claudia is probably closer to this than we are. But it was written by a guy. His philosophy is all about social desire. It's a French guy. So I think Claudia's right. It's not a Western thing. It's a human... I think it's a human thing.
We just supersized or whatasized it.
Yeah, but I think in that
you
same
just thing, owned it.
In that same vein, right? The human aspect of the emotion, envy, it's to me what you do with it, right? So if you're desiring because you're envious, that, and you talked about competition, Jay, that's not a bad thing, right? But how do we define the why, right? After that, right? It can't be so narrow focused as because that company's doing it and we feel they're doing, you know, something great. There has to be more, right? We feel that we could benefit our organization by having some of this stuff put in place because we want to get to somewhere. And I think that second piece is often missing and we just want to do it because they're doing it, right? That's the reason.
Questioning why do you want that same thing?
And you're I this thing that was you were just saying left that's bouncing around in my head is you can actually turn this positively in a good way, right? Like, so if Ivan Claudia is my peer and I see her getting promoted and I know that outside of work she's reading and taking classes and working on herself, well, that's my envy can then be used as a fulcrum, right? As a not a fulcrum, a lever to say, okay, well, I need to put in the work that Claudia is putting in. You know, I need to read and take classes and so on and so forth. And that's, there's a way to turn this into a good thing. It's the, I think corporate wise, it's the mimicry aspect where we think if we just do what they do, we'll get the same results. And it, our systems are way too disparate and complex to hope that would even work.
So let me see this out there, because this is what just emerged for me when you were talking, Jay. Can envy scale? And what I mean by that is individually, well,
he pulled out the S word.
Scaling is not a dirty word unless you're using it in a certain context, right? So
no, it's just connotation and association.
What I just observed
triggered me, but please.
I was going to say, I just triggered the entire panel. Everyone now is in a bad mindset and is going to attack me with this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I'm going to ask it anyway. So individually, we can use envy and become competitive with that thing, right? Whoever we're envious of or whatever. And we can use that emotion to drive change. At scale, can we do that? Does it become too big and does it swallow an organization whole because the envy factor is so deep rooted in the culture that we're always envious? So everything becomes a shiny object or a trigger for us to say, that's not fair. That person got this and I didn't, right? Oh. The organization is broken.
Go on, Mervin, go on.
This is a conversation that I'm having almost daily at my firm right now, mostly because everything, like the larger the corporation you work at, the more that, and we made all the scaling jokes on the front end of Left's question, but something needing to scale to a bunch of teams is a very normal way of approaching, especially business processes. That's why Deloitte came up with rationalization, standardization, and modularization as their change levers, because that's how you get people to act in a similar fashion. And I'm using air quotes for those not watching on video. Like, there is something about that that does resonate. The problem is that human things, this is, and there's sin is the most human thing that we do, right? Air quote sin, right? Like, it's hard to scale being human, right? Like, one person, one scrum master, one product owner, one coach, one manager sitting with one team, getting to the nitty gritty of how can I help you all be your best? We learned years ago that does not scale. This is where the hashtag no scaling comes from, because people are saying you can't scale everything, right? So I would argue the reason why envy scales so very well is that without a human touch, those boundaries, those guardrails that keep sin in a manageable container, right? Desire is not bad, but when it turns into I'll do anything to get what you have, that's when you've shot past every boundary, every wall that you have, right? So by taking the human element out of our work, by trying to modularize and standardize everything, we take the humanity out of it, which means those boundaries for all the sin just go by the wayside. Does someone disagree or have a different take?
Yes, this is breaking my heart, because it all stemmed from using envy as an impetus to change. And I think wanting to change because you want to be like somebody else, it's just saddening. I don't have another word. It breaks my heart. It is so sad that it breaks my heart to think that we would help an organization try to imitate something else, where it just would seem irrelevant and
irrational.
And irrational, and yet it is what happens every day. Because I have never been in a formal transformation. I have never been in an agile, formal agile transformation where you are trying to implement a specific framework or a specific way of working as a means to transform. My transformations have been very different from that. And so having you say, well, we want this because somebody else has it, that's the basis for the whole scaling industry right now.
Let me
we want safe. We want Scrum. We want whatever it is because all these other people are doing it and it was their silver bullet. Or we are reading it as it being their silver bullet. And that makes me even more sad because this thing that I thought was so awful is what is happening every single day.
Yeah, let me flip it on us. Do we become, you just brought up a topic, Claudia, transformation. Do we as coaches become envious of other coaches that are leading transformation and think there's some great success, right? There's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow and we're all going to ride off on a unicorn with our successful transformation. So I know when I talk to other coaches that are leading or part of the way they sell it, I do. I mean, that emotion to me comes very front and center because I'm like, wow, it's one of the questions I ask on an interview of coaches, how many successful transformations have you led? And if they say like 10, I'm like, all right, that's a lie, right? I've been part of many and I can say very few have been successful. So I do become envious when I hear that from other coaches. So me as an individual, I was like someone that wants to help drive change for an organization. I become envious of people that are successful doing that because I haven't felt that in my mind. That although I bet you if you were to ask people that were part of that transformation, they would probably say it was somewhat successful. So how do we balance that desire and then get into that negative headspace, right, as well? So
I think you're onto something, Lef, and the thought is still congealing up here. But are we envious of other coaches who say they have these transformations and they're all running great? Yes, because, and Merwin, we've talked about this, nobody talks about the shit that goes wrong, right? Yeah. Everybody, it's Facebook Agile, right? All you see is my Instagram Agile. You see my vacation. You see my kids. You know, you see the view outside. You see the pool. You don't see the fucking laundry that's built up. You don't see the kitchen cabinet that's a mess. You don't see the dishes, right? Like, so I do think maybe honesty is a way to get in front of envy, because if we all sat in a room in a circle and stared at each other and said, we can't scale this shit. Nobody wants to make the change we need them to make. It doesn't work. Like, and maybe if we had some of those conversations, we would negate some of these sins. But, and the older I get, the more I get it, right? People got bills to pay. Right. They have things they have to do. So I understand the whole acquiescing for the sake of, you know, your greater good. But I think you're right. I think we envy each other because it's a big step when you realize that, wait, we're all lying to each other. It's the astronaut meme. Right. Well, wait, it was all lies. Always has been. Right. Like we gild, but we polish the turd. And we put perfume on the pig. I'm going to run out of fucking aphorisms really quickly. And if we were honest with each other, we'd say, the true response is when Lef goes, yeah, I'm running a transformation I'm trying to think of a place none of us work. I'm running a trans. That's Bowen's a bad example. I'm running a transformation at Target. And a lot of us would go, and with envy, would go, oh man, I how do I get that job? If we were all being honest with each other, Lef would sit down at the bar and say, I'm running a transformation at Target. And everybody would go, oof, my condolences. Where do you want me to send the flowers? Like, is that, I mean, if we're all being honest with each other.
I'm triggered by the word transformation. Even if it is what we actually intend to do, it just seems so pretentious. I don't envy somebody saying I'm leading a transformation, because my initial thought is you're full of shit and you're full of yourself.
That is, so that hit the nail on the head of what I was just about to say, which is I think that pride is a precursor for the harder the pride, the greater the envy on the back end kind of a thing. Like, so y'all were just talking about how so-and-so's getting to do this. Why aren't I can do that. There is a strong whiff of pride in that of I can do that. I 2 years ago, I thought leading a transformation was the coolest thing in the world. That was when I got hired to run and lead a transformation. I remember we talked about it. I talked about it with y'all and how excited I was. And then I got to do it and I'm like, leading a transformation is terrible. I'm good with not being in fully, being in charge is a relative term as well, because I was never in charge of it. I was at the kid at, there was the adults table. And then I was over off to the side as the agile nerd trying to help with the transformation. So I was never really in charge of anything, but this idea of being in charge does stem from this idea of I can do it. If you can do it, I can do it. And we're not being honest with each other. We're just, if we would, we would have conference presentations of like, you don't want to own this transformation.
But you just brought up something interesting.
Right there. There we go, Lev. There we go. You don't want to own this transformation.
You just brought up an interesting kind of experience where, to me, envy can really thrive. Is as a little kid sitting at the little kid table, I'm envious of the adult sitting at the big table, right? I want to go to the big table. They look like they're having more fun. So that, to me, like, we learned at a very early age how to envy things. And I think what we're not taught, and it's a harder lesson to learn through life, is how to deal with that emotion, right? How do we take that envy and use it differently than just being emotional about it? And I think, again, as we go through this series, one thing that reveals, that keeps popping into my head, is organizations are highly emotional, right? They do trend with emotion. So if there's a lot of this sinning in the atmosphere of an organization, how are they using that, right? Does that become the toxic qualities of the organization for them to be blinded by, we want to be agile, but that can never be the goal, right? We want to deal with change differently. Agile is a means, a mindset. We're going to use these frameworks to align and deliver different, you know? So I don't hear that piece of it. I never hear that the strategy behind this is really to drive change differently, to support the organization through the crazy, because the crazy never goes away.
It's just different crazy tomorrow.
it's as bipolar as bipolar gets, right? It's split personality disorder. I mean, there's so much psychological baggage in organizations. So I think that's an interesting way to look at it, is how do we acknowledge that the health of our organization, our psychiatric health, is that even a thing?
That's a great way to put it. I actually wrote that down. I'm gonna steal that. The idea that organizations are emotional, because they are. I mean, it's
because humans are. And
here we are back to the egregore, right? Like, it is a manifestation of a culture, and that culture is a living thing, and it's emotional. And you're right. It almost takes over and drives itself, right? The idea, people don't have ideas. Ideas have people. Shout out to Jim O'Shaughnessy. That idea drives itself. It has its own wants, its means, its own ends. And we get caught up in that furtherance of an idea that you want to do agile, you want to be agile, you want to have an agile company. And I mean, as practitioners, I think, to take this almost meta, I think the biggest thing that we struggle with as practitioners, coaches, scrum masters, whatever, is we spend a lot of time going to conferences, reading books, watching podcasts, going to classes. And we always talk about what could be. We don't really talk about what should be. And more importantly,
do we though?
What? Do we talk about what could be?
No. Do we spend a lot of time going to classes, going to conferences?
Some do. So
that's part of my envy.
Well, I think that, but I also think there's a tipping point there, right? Where some of the concern that I have with even some of the people I've had conversations with on our Discord is, I think some of us, and I caught myself in this rut, are overeducated in what could be. And that actually adds these weird sort of, not blinders, but almost glasses where everything's on a weird angle, where all we can see is what could be. And we lack the conceptualization of what should be or what is. And we delude ourselves into these wonderful stories about an organization should do this, 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 and this. But at the same time, it's like, sometimes you need that ruthless pragmatist who's going to go, that shit won't work. It's just not going to work. And here's why. And blah, 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 blah. And they rattle it off. Like, I'm not saying they're right or wrong, but you need that counterbalance almost.
So, but you're describing what I was referring to earlier, which is that there are boundaries that should keep us from a strong desire to turn into full-blown envy, right? There should be guardrails in an organization. There's something in every organization that we work in. There's some rule that you have said, wait, so they don't, like, I can't use that? For example, the notion of, you know, ChatGPT just being prevalent across every technical organization. Like, no, there are tons of organizations that are like, we have data privacy concerns. We don't want this organization getting their claws on our code and this and that and whatever. And I'm not saying that's negative. I'm saying, but every organization has a version of that, of some sort of legal barrier boundary that keeps us from turning into full-blown envy. And I worry that we think that the boundary that's there is a bad one, but then when we try to propose other boundaries and everybody's like, whoa, that's bad, like, we're like, well, why don't you want this? Like, there, everybody has a version of a boundary they think is dumb or unnecessary, but those boundaries are super important for us to have as humans. Otherwise we go off the rails.
Right. The enabling constraint. Left, you're sitting there grinning. What's going on?
No, I love kind of where this is going. And I think I'm just recapping through like experiences and trying to, I think I just keep going back to, I think we become envious as organizations when we believe other things are being successful outside of our organization, and then how that gets skewed. You know, you talked about balance, and I think we lose sight of being balanced because we're micro-focused on one thing. And I think that creates a us being misguided to get there, because there is not one-stop shopping with this. Mm-hmm. And I think also to that point, like you saw it with Spotify years ago, like everyone wanted to go Spotify, yet Spotify said, never use our model outside of Spotify. It just didn't make a lot of sense. And I think that's what is frustrating from a coaching lens, is why it doesn't make sense. Like, what, this doesn't make, the start doesn't make sense. So we're often tasked, due to maybe envy, to do something without any sense, right? Like roll out Scrum, make sure everyone's story pointing, right? And now we're going to compare teams by story points. Where in the Scrum guide does it say to do that? Where did that come from? Why do we do that? So are we truly understanding the change, why we're changing? Here's some methods to accommodate change, right? If we break things down smaller, we can consume them. When things are too big, like transformation, very hard to consume. Huge.
Yeah.
That was a weird tangent. Sorry.
No, it wasn't weird at all. It wasn't weird at all. I think the interesting piece is, so some of this I'm saving for our last podcast, just because we're going to put a bow on this sucker one way, shape, or form. I do think that the interesting part about, maybe we can end on this, the interesting part about envy is some of the things that they were envious about aren't the same as before COVID, right? This notion of, well, we all have to do Scrum. Everybody has to have a CSM. Everybody has to be an SPC. We all have to scale. I think companies are starting to push back and saying, like, IT leaders are starting to say, I don't have to do that. I don't have to. I know that agility is a big push, but I don't have to do all this. I think they're just now starting to stand up and say, I don't have to be at least that version of the, you know, now the new thing is AI, and even you would think that at this point in time, the cloud would be something standardized, and it's not, right? So you would think, but cloud and AI ML is kind of where everybody's headed. Like, agile's more passe. And so it is interesting having conversations now, because they're actually willing to say, I'm not envious of what that other team, like those, they spend 3 hours a week story pointing, story like work to quote what Lef was saying. Like, I don't envy those fuckers at all.
Which, you know? A whole different, and I don't want to derail us. I think we shouldn't end on that, but that's a different conversation to have, Merman. How come we can have the come to Jesus moment with certain corporate trends, but not others? How come we can have this about Agile, right? And okay, maybe I don't want to spend hours story pointing, where I would argue cloud infrastructure is way more destructive than any Agile attempt at transformation inside of a company, because it is woefully complex. There's not enough people that understand it. And companies want the cloud that don't need the cloud. So maybe that's a different conversation to have, is why.
Definitely another podcast.
Why do some trends? Why are people, why, here we go. Why does the envy wear off with certain trends, fads, leading thoughts, and it doesn't with others? Is it because the memes are that good? The memetic desire is that strong? Like, here I am back to square one. Yeah. Okay. All right. We're going to end it on that because, wait a minute. Final thoughts. We know we have Claudia on much. Claudia, final thoughts. And I caught her mid-yawn, everyone. So give her a moment.
It wasn't a yawn. It was
a gasp. Aside.
Yes. Thank
oh
you.
Oh my gosh.
How did we not touch on like the individual part? We only talked about organizations. So I'm going to leave this wishing we had talked about individual envy.
Oh, I got time. You want to keep going? Let's keep going.
I'll keep going.
All right. All right, Claudia, kick us off.
You said earlier, all those trainings, all those books, all those conferences, it sounds like we're in very privileged positions, because if you can do all those conferences, all those trainings, all those books, then you've got something that other people might be envious of.
Yeah.
I'm personally envious of all these people that I don't know what it's like everywhere else. In France, there are so many Agile tours in like every other city. And I feel like people are doing the Agile Tour de France, if I'm going to say it correctly. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could do that. And at the same time, I'm like, no, that just doesn't work for me in my life. But I'm sure they're having loads of connections and learning lots, or envious of people who are reading all those books and who can actually retain the knowledge, first of all. Definitely envious of that. Or the trainings. I talk to so many people on a daily basis who are struggling to get any training from their companies, any at all. And I remember being in that position. I remember having, like, I did some weird things to get trainings. And so many people that I know are in that same situation.
It's true. I worked at a company where we had a big training budget each year. Some of us were lucky, and that definitely does create envy. People that attend conferences every year, they're not inexpensive, right? There is that level of envy. I guess my question is, can you use that as a motivator, right? Like, could I use my envy as a motivator to improve and or do something? I don't know. Lef, you were grinning.
Yeah. I think it to me, whether it's individual or multiples, I think the way you handle it can be similar, right? So can you use that to drive to be resourceful, right? To actually use it and find other means, right? Like, not everybody, I have no training budget. So I have to seek knowledge elsewhere. And to me, that motivates me to think outside the box in that way, right? So I'm motivated different by my envious kind of emotion or trigger to say, all right, I'm never going to get money for training or conferences. I have to now figure out how to be creative in sourcing that info. So, you know, you could say the Discord, right? Some people provide free training, or is there anything on, we don't have to go down there, but it's just a matter of, can you, like what Jay said, can you use that in a way that creates a positive experience or an impactful experience? I think yes. Now, whether we're emotionally stable enough and desire to do that without staying triggered in that negative space, that's hard, right? I mean, to me, going back to kind of either either you're in it or you're not. You can't be a little bit pregnant. So to me, you're either driven to do it or you're not. And I have this conversation with teenagers as far as just saying, wow, that sounded weird. Teenage kids that live in this house that are part of this family, no ditty. So literally, how are we using the power of thought and conversation to understand when we're triggered by these emotions, right? So if I'm triggered by envy, am I now going to project that on someone else in a way that creates a negative experience that just gets amplified?
I think that so Claudia, specifically to your, I want to get educated, I want to go to conferences and such, like the real, like I never had a budget. The only reason why I am on the program team for 20XX now is because a decade ago plus, the place I was working did not have money to send me to a conference. So the only way I knew I was ever going to a conference was if I got a free ticket, and I hear that speakers get free tickets. I did not start writing abstracts so that I could be known as Mr. Speaker and professional presenter. I just wanted to go, and the only way I knew I was getting to go was by being invited to speak. So I get that. Here's the interesting thing about envy is that envy breaks down the minute you share your frustration, your desire with someone else, and you compare it with their wants and desires, their needs, what they've experienced. Because if you had told me that a decade ago, I would have been like, yes, I have that same envy, that same everything. And now that I've done it, I'm like, eh. I mean, I'm not putting down that learning, that experience of being there, because lifelong friends I've met at those conferences and such. But, you know, I having experienced all of that, like, you're way more intelligent and articulate and experienced and thoughtful and heartfelt than a lot of people I see at conferences, and you didn't need to do that to get to be where you are. So like I see you as like you don't need, I had to do that to get to where I am, and you had experienced a level of accomplishment without needing that. So I guess why I mean that is that where envy is great up to a point in time where you start talking to other people about each other's desires and wants and needs and such, and then you're like, maybe I don't want and need all that. Is that fair?
Yes. No, I was projecting certain
sure.
envies.
Of course.
But I think I'm gonna flip it, because what I'm taking away is the most important part of that envy is understanding what is the motivation behind it. So if the motivation is to learn, then yes, use it as a motivator to be able to learn, find more creative or different ways of learning. Because that it did the same thing for me as, okay, I want to go to conference. I want to go to conferences. I want to learn. How can I do that? I don't have a training budget. How am I going to get myself the knowledge that I want, or the knowledge that other people are sharing with me? So
I would love to hear, Claudia, and I'm not trying to be funny. You said, you know, I did all sorts of crazy shit in order to get my budget to be funded. I think that is a topic in and of itself, right? Like, because I guarantee you thought outside the box, right? And I think others would be benefited by, hey, oh, that's an interesting way to approach it, right? Like, I mean, as long as you didn't do anything illegal, and even if you did do something illegal at this point, you know, nobody really cares. But I think
nothing
that
illegal
would
be, or immoral.
Well, moral is a shit. It's not black and white. It's gray. We'll touch on that. But I think that would be an interesting conversation to have, just understanding, because, you know, maybe there's a way that, you know, maybe there's a way that it worked for you, that maybe it would work for other people, right? Like, we all need to get a little bit creative in this sort of thing, because much like the days of Wine and Agile are over, the days of unlimited training budgets are over. And those training budgets, honestly, they keep going down the more corporate real estate gets empty, right? I think there's a correlation there. So we do need to be inventive.
I think it's fair. I don't know. Like, I think we can leave it there. I mean, I think individually, these sins are really fascinating. I think the struggle is that most of us don't get to, again, if we have these boundaries, if we have some individual interaction where we can compare our wants, desires, you know, things, it breaks down when we start actually communicating to each other. So I think that, and that was something I'm planning on touching on for our seventh sin, wrapping this whole thing up, is like all of these sins magnify in a vacuum, right? Mm-hmm. See, everything magnifies, and by breaking things down and talking to each other and doing that whole individuals and interactions thing, which is now cliche, but is still very true.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of these sins break down, and we realize like, I'm not really that wrathful. I just was pissed off about that meeting, or I don't really want what Jay has. I mean, I want some of what he has, but I don't want all of what he has because of this and that and the other that he shared with me over things, right? So Claudia, you point out a really important thing, which is like individual envy is strong, but I think that the moment you start sharing who you are, like you're like, that is the secret sauce that makes you amazing. And I think many of our community, it makes you amazing as to say like, I showed up and I brought my heart and I brought a little bit of empathy with me. No sin lasts when you start truly experiencing that. Is that a fair way to drop this?
We're going to miss Lef's, how do you turn it into a positive? But it sounds like we were already going down that route of using it as a motivator, using it as a means to share with each other. And I think maybe even being grateful, because we started out talking about organizations and what does somebody else have? Well, what do we have that's our special sauce within our organization? So recognizing what you already have, I think would also be a way of turning it around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's perfectly said. All right. I'm going to wrap us up we did a cold open. We're doing a cold close. Thank you, Claudia. Thank you, Merman. Thank you, Lef, had to leave us. Find us on Discord, continue this conversation, tune in next week for, I guess, the next episode of the Sin Podcast, and we're eventually going to get to the seven virtues. But all right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for listening.
Bye.